This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Welcome into Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Thanks for making us part of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here as we talk about the markets and issues impacting rural America. Broadcasting live again today from Dakota Fest in Mitchell, South Dakota. Got a busy show planned here today. A lot of great content, so thank you for joining us. Joining us now, Chief Economist with the Farmers Business Network, Kevin McNew. Kevin, great to catch up with you again, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jesse?
I am fantastic. I appreciate the time today, Kevin. Let's jump right in. A couple new reports out from FBN. Let's talk the 2022 corn and soybean yield report. I know you guys released your yield report here just before the August WASDE from USDA. I want to talk about your guys' report, though. What did we find for corn yield and soybean yield here nationwide? What are you guys seeing after your report?
Yeah, I mean, our numbers certainly differ from what USDA threw down on Friday. And I will caution listeners that USDA's data, well, you know, they're doing the best they can. It's not always a really good accurate estimate of final yields. In fact, there's a lot of analysts, including ourselves, that have a better track record in recent years at hitting the final numbers when you compare it to what USDA throws down in August. So, yeah, I think the trade got a little spooked this morning. We're seeing the results of that. They didn't get a yield reduction on corn. We certainly think there's room to go to the downside on corn. We think there's some risk in the Western Corn Belt where there's been quite a bit of heat, especially. And so we use a lot of satellite imagery. And the other thing we do is really kind of zone in on acres that are really corn acres. We do that in season forecasting of pixels on the ground, if you will, that are truly corn acres. And so we get pretty granular in our forecast. So, we're still on the low side. We think there's risk to go closer to 170 than 175 today. But, we'll see what time says.
Well, and I know as well some of the findings you mentioned, that dry Western Corn Belt. I know your report yields at Iowa and Nebraska expected to be significantly below some of the strong yields we saw in 2021. Of course, you think Iowa. I mean, Iowa holds up a lot of our national average for corn yields typically in a normal year, Kevin.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, Iowa clearly the stalwart of corn production, but even into Minnesota, Nebraska as well. So, the three of the four key states, I think, are let's call them question marks for the time being. And certainly corn conditions, if you look at Iowa corn conditions this year, they look pretty good. But I will, again, when we look at the data, corn conditions this time of year are not very good indicators of final yield. So they can look good as you kind of drive by, and so we're getting good corn conditions. But, extreme heat, I think, could potentially lead to some fill problems as we get closer to harvest. So you're right. Our Iowa yields are a little bit lower. Minnesota was another state where we're quite a bit lower than USDA. And again, I attribute that to some of the extreme heat and dryness, especially in the western part of Iowa.
Well, and I know as well, in the Northern Plains, we saw late planting up there, but things looking fairly good across the Northern Plains. So that may be an area where we could see some yields increase for quarter beans. It sounded like from your report, Kevin, but we take a stock overall of everything. If we do see these declining yields, that's going to tighten up the balance sheet. And I wonder what that would do for markets moving forward. I think, again, there's just a few question marks out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, in normal years, Jesse, I think we worry a lot about the minutiae of U.S. corn yield and kind of, You know, we get really, really hyper-focused as a trade. What I want farmers to take away is this is a much different environment. We are in an inflationary environment. I know the inflation trade has kind of eased off in the last 3 to 4 months, but I don't think that story's over. I don't think we're not anywhere close to normal. I don't think we're going to normalize anytime soon. I think as we get into 2023 and producers start looking at 2023, we're going to see high fertilizer prices. We're going to see, you know, a lot of things that I think are going to change the dynamics. So, you know, the bottom line, as I see it, is we have inflation that is kind of demand side driven in agriculture. We also have supply issues with Ukraine not being a major powerhouse in agricultural supply. So I know, you know, the trade wants to get excited that, you know, one boat or two boats left a port a couple of weeks ago, but that's well shy of what we need. And I don't think we're going to see Ukraine back anytime soon, even if this war were to normalize and relations were to normalize. There's a lot of long-term logistics and capital destruction that's happened in that country. And so you're talking about, you know, number four, top four, top five major producer that is really handicapped for, I'd say, at least 3 to 5 years. And I think that keeps a floor into markets.
Kevin, let's talk another report from FBN here in the last week, Farmland Values Report. Talk to us about this and some of the results that you guys found in this report, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, farmland values went up sharply this last year, and we were certainly expecting that. You know, we talk in this report about how there's kind of two key indicators that we track that really kind of give us a signal on farmland values. One of them is kind of profitability on the farm. Not surprising. We call it kind of a cumulative net farm income over successive years. And, you know, net farm income over the last couple of years has been pretty solid. And so that's translating into growth in farmland values. The other thing, and I think this is more important as we think about today, is what we call the real interest rate, real mortgage rate. And that's because it takes into account inflation. And, you know, everyone's talking about inflation and, oh my gosh, this is like the 1980s. And, you know, as someone who was you know, alive and well in the 1980s, I remember inflation. I remember skyrocketing interest rates. But what we show in this report is that until you get interest rates that are well above inflation, then you don't really start to choke down farmland values. And so a lot of people will think about the 1980s and how farmland values really went soft and really, you know, there was really hard times in the 1980s. And we talk about in this report how this is not the 1980s. Some of it due to what I just mentioned just here a second ago is that we have a really strong demand side story, and we have constraints in agriculture that I think are going to lead us to be, you know, seeing higher values. But then secondly, you know, inflation is high and interest rates are still relatively low. So we're not in that paradigm we were in the 80s, when in the 80s we saw interest rates really skyrocket above inflation rates. And we're a long way from there. So I feel positive about farmland values going forward. Maybe not as strong growth in the coming year as we saw last year, but certainly positive growth, and certainly no reason to be alarmed about, you know, farmland values going lower.
Well, I know if producers want to learn more, they can read both the recent reports from Farmers Business Network online, FBN.com. With that, Kevin McNew, Chief Economist with Farmers Business Network, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jesse.
Coming up next, a conversation with David Widmar from Agricultural Economic Insights. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now on the program, our good friend David Widmar with Agricultural Economic Insights. David, always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jesse. Thanks for reaching out. Great to chat with you today.
Yeah, great to talk with you as well, and happy to have you back on the program, David. Let's dive right in. We got plenty to discuss. I think first top of mind, David, let's talk about what you're seeing with the yield forecast for this year. We just had the August USDA report. We saw a lower corn yield nationally, slightly higher soybean yield. You guys have the Ag Forecast Network. What are you hearing from growers who use the Forecast Network about this year's yields?
goal of the Ag Forecast Network, that uncertainty tools, to have better conversations about uncertainty. And so uncertainty is the game. And it doesn't make sense for a lot of folks like myself or most listeners to make point estimates as private industry does, because they have data. That's how you make estimates. So we have the question, what's the probability of the corn yield estimate being raised from 177? That was where we were last month. And we've asked similar questions throughout the growing season. And the expectation of that turning higher is very, very low. I think the consensus is about 5%. That's the lowest that we've seen it. For context, it was around a 30% chance last month. And so that's been brewing in the background. So a lot of expectations of unchanged or lower. Not many folks think the corn crop is going to get bigger. The second piece here, Jesse, is that we ask a long burn question. We call it the long burn because it's going to be based on the November WASDE. We've been asking it since May. And it's what's the probability that November WASDE report coming in above trend normal, which is 181 bushels. And what's interesting there is we can compare it to the past years. Generally speaking, we don't see expectations really change significantly away from the baseline, which is around 50 to 60% chance of happening, until end of June or 1st of July. We saw big expectations of this crop coming in below trend normal all the way from the beginning, and it stayed pretty small. It's a pretty low expectation. So we'll see where the USDA comes in. We'll recalibrate the questions going to September and October. But one thing I like to remind folks is that there's still uncertainty about the crop itself and then how we can measure it. And so we need to keep that in mind through the next 3 to 4 months.
David, I want to talk to you a little bit about inflation and just where our commodity prices are and exchange rates. I know you're working on a story for the AEI website right now. But, you know, we think about inflation. We've seen moderating numbers here out from the CPI and the PPI, the U.S. dollar coming a little bit off its highs, but still pretty elevated. But you were mentioning to me a little bit about exchange rates and how that looks a little bit different, how there could be some sticker shock for some of our export partners. So can you walk us through your thoughts here and talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's always a little difficult to think about exchange rates and the impact of exchange rates, a bit of an abstract idea or maybe an academic idea. And the way I think about it is our international buyers of corn and soybeans have to first buy dollars. And so if the dollar is strong, which is a more accurate way of saying that, it's more expensive. So if they have 100 of their local currencies and the dollar is more expensive, that cuts into their purchasing power. And then they turn around and take those dollars, and if commodity prices go up, that cuts into their purchasing power. So what we've done is we've looked back, you know, going back to 2010 and said, what's this look like? And so if you look at farm level prices, roughly speaking, prices today are, you know, similar to what we saw in that 2012 to 2013 window. I know that we're plus or minus a big window here, but we're roughly on par. But when we look at some of our trade partners, such as Japan and Mexico, they face a much different environment today than they saw back in that 2012 and 2013 window. Why? Well, commodity prices the last time were high with a low dollar, with an inexpensive dollar, with a weak dollar. Today, we have similar commodity prices, but with a much stronger, more expensive dollar. And so when you think about purchasing power and how many dollars they need to, how much of their local currency, their pesos or the yens, that they have to bring to the market to buy a similar number of bushels, it's getting to be very expensive for them. So I think we got to keep that in the back of our mind. The other thing I'll always mention with exchange rates is that we talk about it in broad strokes, but we got to remember, it gets down to each commodity has a different set of trade partners. Each country has a very different set of trade partners that they're buying from. And so it's all relative. And it's like the most relative game that we have. It's all these relative prices. And that's always important to keep in mind, is that it's hard to make broad statements like the dollar is strong and then understand the implications for a specific commodity and a specific trade partner.
David, I want to talk to you a little bit about China. We've seen in the news, obviously, the geopolitical issues between the U.S. and China recently over Taiwan and House Speaker Pelosi's visit there. China, of course, is a trade partner of the U.S. that we watch very closely, it feels like, at the markets all the time. And I know you've got some new insights related to China's total ag purchases here, the pace of their purchases, et cetera. As you look at some of this data, what do you see there? And any thoughts on just the overall relationship right now over the Taiwan issues between U.S. and China?
Well, I think a great place to start with this is to remind folks that in, I believe it was January or February of 1972, 50 years ago, Richard Nixon shocked the world by flying Air Force One to Beijing and beginning the normalization of diplomatic communications with that country. That was really the first crack in the door for China having any kind of interaction with the world order that we know it as. And so, you know, this summer's historic plane trip to that part of the world is, you know, came 50 years later. But what's really important is that without the trade war going on, without the phase one trade agreement, we've kind of lost sight of this trade watch with China, this ag trade watch. We've been looking at this. It's pretty amazing, Jesse. China's back. They've been buying. We have 5 months of trade data, specifically at the commodity level. They've been buying. Our estimates is that it's a pace at about a $40 billion pace thus far. Now, there's a lot that can happen. There's a lot of seasonality that weights it to the back end of the calendar year. But $40 billion compared to the record of $36 billion last year, and the previous record was $29 billion back in 2013, we're setting the stage here for some big trade numbers. It's been kindly going largely under the radar screen. When we look at some of the commodity-specific trends, China's corn purchases, which are kind of astronomical to begin with, they've been staying on pace. I think that's a positive story. The other positive story is beef. They bought about 55% more beef through the first 5 months of this year than they did in the first 5 months of 2021. Just a lot of beef purchases. Now, on the other hand, soybeans, we have a big increase in the value of soybean purchases, looking pretty decent. But on the quantity level, we haven't seen new soybean purchases in the first 5 months of the year. So we'll see how this plays out when we get into the new marketing year. We look at bushels going out through the new crop that's going to get harvested. But China still has a lot to purchase. And I think folks need to keep in mind that there's a positive story out there, but with uncertainty comes that risk, and the range of possible outcomes seems to be pretty wide. And it's kind of like the trade war. It seems like a low probability event, but it could have a really big consequential outcome.
Well, David, fantastic stuff there. As we look as well, just at the broader global economy, the global ag economy, any other thoughts with what we're seeing here as we work through the month of August? Anything that stands out to you that you want to mention here today?
I think one of the things, there are two factors that are going to be key going through the next 6 months in U.S. agriculture. One of them is supply, the size of the crop, how that's going to set the tone, not only for this year and this calendar year, but going into 2023. If we see a short crop here in the United States, it's going to perpetuate these high commodity prices, these strong farmland markets, these strong cash rental rate markets. But if we come in with a average or large crop, that could take some of that steam out of that. I think the other issue here is these non-ag issues. So we have issues like the conflict in Ukraine, the war in Ukraine, the sanctions on Russia, the energy markets that are unfolding from that, but also here at the macro economy, thinking about interest rates and how the Fed could be raising interest rates, inflation. All of these things are largely outside of the balance sheet. They impact the estimates of the balance sheet, but they're largely not balance sheet specific numbers. And so I think that's what's really frustrating for producers. It's causing a lot of angst, is that I don't know how to market these. And I'll tell you why these are so challenging to think about, Jesse, is that even if I told you the outcome, it'd be darn near impossible to go to the market and trade and make a positive outcome for that. If I told you how the Russian war was going to resolve, if I told you where the Fed was going to have interest rates a year from now, I'm not sure that's even information that you could put into the model and get a good feel for the implications for corn prices, for soybean prices, for example. There's just so much chaos. There's so many moving pieces that it's really hard to figure out how it's all going to fit together.
Well, David, I should give a plug as well for the Forecast Network and the premium side of AEI.ag. You guys have a lot of great research, commentary, and tools there for producers. How can producers learn more if they're interested in checking things out?
Yeah, our work focuses on the ag economy, key trends from grain markets to farm management tips. So if you're a grower or you work with producers sitting across the tables at Trusted Advisor, go to AEI.ag, sign up for our free weekly newsletter, where you can also check out the subscription through AEI Premium. We even have a couple podcast seasons that review key issues, so feel free to check those out as well.
David Widmar with Agricultural Economic Insights. Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again real soon. Have a great one.
Thanks, Jesse.
And we'll be back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining me now here live at Dakota Fest, we were able to catch up with American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall. Zippy, it is great to see you again, sir. How are you?
I'm good. And it's good to be back into South Dakota and be here at Dakota Fest, and hope everybody, if they're not here, we hope they're planning on coming out.
We hope they do plan to come out here the next couple of days for Dakota Fest just outside of Mitchell, South Dakota. Zippy, no shortage of topics for us to talk about. I think for starters, top of mind, we've been hearing a lot about it. The Inflation Reduction Act just passed in Washington, D.C. last week. There was a lot in there for agriculture on the climate side and ethanol, et cetera. There was a lot of things in there. What are your thoughts? What are American Farm Bureau Federation's thoughts on the passage of that and some of the things that were in there for agriculture?
Well, we're very appreciative that Congress recognizes the role that we have played in the past and we're going to play in the future when it comes to climate and the opportunities that come along with that funding around climate. So we're looking forward to that. But we are, as a organization, we're real concerned about the direction our country's going in, and we think that bill should have been more focused on the inflation and the economy and putting people back to work and doing things that not just help farmers but help every American.
Well, and you mentioned inflation in the economy. I know that is something that not only we've seen the volatility in the commodity markets, but, you know, at the grocery store, prices of everything going up and up. And really, a lot of folks across the country, rural America, they're feeling the pinch in their pocketbook here as we go through the summer, Zippy.
Yeah, they're feeling the pinch like our farmers are with what it costs them to fill their tractors up and go across the field. You know, I was standing in a grocery store in Madison, Georgia the other day, the neighboring town from my farm, and a lady come up beside me. We were both standing there looking at hamburger meat, and she looks down and she said, "That's what I was going to feed my children for supper tonight, but I just don't think I can afford it." And it really touched my heart, and I wonder how many stories like that are across America today. And that's not the intention of the family farm, because none of that high price is getting back to a cow-calf guy or a family feeder.
No, it is not. And we think about our farmers, you know, when their cost of inputs go up, obviously that gets, you know, passed on down the chain to our consumers. And we think about the volatility in the markets and, you know, our farmers and ranchers, whether that we're a cattle producer like you are, or in the hog market, or corn, soybeans, wheat, et cetera, cotton. It's amazing to see the wild volatility tied to everything around the world, inflation here, the geopolitical issues, etc. It's really been a wild ride here the last couple of months.
It is, you know, and what amazes me is the optimism that our farmers have, and they continue to go out and borrow this money and put the seed in the ground and look to the Lord to send the rain and grow that crop, and all the things around the world that are coming head on with us, with regulation and farm to fork in Europe and people trying to take our crop protection tools away. You know, we got some headwinds, but it really amazes me the optimism I see in our farmers.
You brought up a great point there, taking some of the tools away. Let's shift to the regulation side. I know EPA, one thing top of mind for me, atrazine, the talk about taking that away, and that's been a key component for our corn, wheat producers, et cetera, for years. And so seeing that, I know that is a big concern amongst farmers and ranchers. Is it a big concern for American Farm Bureau?
It's huge to us. Atrazine, along with a lot of other crop protection tools. And we continue to hammer on EPA and the administrator that what ought to rule the day is sound science, not passion, not lawsuits, not money. It ought to be all about sound science, and if sound science says that we're safe in using those products, they ought to be in our toolbox so that we can be more efficient, so that the consumers in America won't have to pay too much for the crop, for the product.
Well, and I think as well, Farm Bureau members, as well as, you know, other farmers and ranchers across the country, on top of what you guys are doing with American Farm Bureau and other groups, them reaching out to their senators, congressmen, women, et cetera, and trying to get their message that, you know, they don't want to see this regulation on atrazine, I think that would help as well, wouldn't it?
You're absolutely right. This is my 7th year as president of American Farm Bureau. I would tell you that when we're successful not because of me, not because of a State Farm Bureau president. We're successful because our County Farm Bureau and their membership respond and to our calls to action and let their voice be heard about these issues as we lay the groundwork for that conversation in Washington.
Another regulation topic I think of as well just came to my mind that we kind of, I think, maybe have put on the back burner a little bit, WOTUS, or, you know, the regulation of our waters and, you know, wondering what is going to be, you know, in front of us here with the administration. There's just been so many changes the last couple of years. It's a little hard to keep track of sometimes.
It really is. It's almost like a ping pong game. It just depends on who's sleeping in the White House as to in what party it is, as to which direction we're going. And we had a great working relationship with the previous president and was able to bring a rule together that we felt like something we could live with. And then lo and behold, we changed parties again, and we're going back the other way. But I will say that this administration has given us a seat at the table. I've had the opportunity to personally visit with the administrator several times. I think his heart's in the right place. We got to find that happy medium of where we can put a rule forward that farmers and ranchers can live with and try to keep our federal government out of the courthouse and stop this back and forth ruling, because we as farmers, you know, we want to take care of our land. We've always wanted to take care of our land. But we can't make any long-range plans when we don't know what the playing field looks like.
Well, Zippy, I know as well, not only are you president of American Farm Bureau, you're a cattle guy. Let's talk cattle markets a little bit. There's all this, you know, talk about cattle market reforms, and it seems that it's hard for everyone to get on the same page because there's so many different ideas out there. I know the Grassley-Fisher bill is probably, at this point, the bill that's farthest enough along that may or may not get passed here. Talk to me about American Farm Bureau Federation's stance on that bill and your thoughts on cattle market reform.
Well, we do not support a mandate in cash sales. We feel like that's the wrong direction to go. That bill does have some good things in it that our policy supports. But our board's made a stand that we're not going to support that mandate. And we've been working with Grassley staff and Fisher staff to try to find some way to find some common ground in that so we could move something forward. Really and truly, you know, as a producer myself, you know, the best way to find a solution and answer is to do it within the industry. And the only way to do that is to get feeders and cow-calf guys and packers to sit down and figure out how we do that. Because I think a lot of people feel the same way. We don't want federal government there unless we have to. But that may be what we have to do in the end.
Well, and I wonder as well, you know, maybe in the end of the day, everyone involved may not be completely happy, but if everyone can agree, I think that's what it comes down to, Zippy.
That's exactly right. But, you know, a packer is not, he's not going to fare very well if it's not a cow-calf got that. Cow-calf got out there raising the calves. And we need each other, and we need to find a happy medium. And it's no reason for us to struggle on the farm and not even be able to send our own children to college because we're not making enough off of it, and then look and see record profits being reported by packers. There's something wrong when that happens, and we should be able as an industry find a solution to that.
Well, Zippy, we've touched on quite a few topics here. Before we run out of time, anything else we haven't touched on? Any other issues American Farm Bureau Federation's looking at moving forward?
Just like you said in the beginning, there's many, many issues. I would bring everybody's attention to the rule that the SEC is putting out.
Yes.
It deals with companies that are being traded on the market and making commitments like climate commitments by 2030. The SEC wants to make sure that they live up to that and prove that they're, and so it's going to make them trace their the footprint all the way back to the raw product. And guess where the raw product comes from? It comes from the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
We have asked our members and farmers to reach out to the SEC and express their concern about that, because they have absolutely no authority to regulate us, but in a roundabout way they could. And we've had a tremendous response from farmers and ranchers, even to the point to where the chairman of the SEC called me and says, why am I getting all these emails from farmers and Farm Bureau people? And I had the opportunity to give him example after example of how his rule was going to regulate us, and it was not the right thing to do. So he's promised us a seat at the table. Hopefully we can avoid that. I'm optimistic, but I'm an optimistic guy, but we're going to be in there making sure the farmer's voice is being heard.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I that was one thing that was on my mind, but I kind of forgot it here as we're having such a great discussion, Zippy. It is a very important issue that farmers and ranchers definitely are going to stay aware of, and we appreciate everything you do with the American Farm Bureau Federation and the folks with AFBF. And I know you're traveling a lot this month, making the trip around rural America, but thanks for spending some time with us here today during Dakota Fest.
Well, thank you, Jesse. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today, and I appreciate what you do and the men and women that do the job you do, because y'all help us get the word out to our farmers to make sure that they can be informed and be ready to react when we call on them.
Well, Zippy, thanks again for the time. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
God bless y'all.
And again, that is American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall joining us during Dakota Fest. Great to catch up with Zippy and catch a few minutes of his time as he was making his way around the grounds at Dakota Fest in Mitchell, South Dakota. And of course, Zippy making his rounds just around the country here the next couple of weeks, talking with farmers and ranchers across the country about issues that they are concerned about. So again, great to get a few minutes there with American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall. Coming up next to wrap up the show today, we're going to have a crop protection conversation with Jeff Bunting of GrowMark FS. He joins us next, back with more Market Talk right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now, VP of Crop Protection with GrowMark, Jeff Bunting is with us. Jeff, great to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us here today. And let's dive right in. I think first, just top of mind, we're working through the growing season, Jeff. We're starting to get to various crop tours across the country and a lot of private yield estimates. And we're hearing the stories from growers, you know, how things are wet in some areas, especially in the Eastern Corn Belt, or have been too wet and then dry in the West, and all the heat and everything else going on. So just as you've talked with your folks across the country on your teams, talk to growers, et cetera, what are your thoughts on this year's crop? How are things looking, Jeff?
A great question. A lot to unpack there in terms of, you know, kind of what we're hearing, you know, what we're seeing and what we think is out there. And I think we'll see all different extremes, from really, really good crops to some really, really poor crops. And again, social media kind of allows you to take a look at that right now. If you follow different, you know, farmers, producers, you know, manufacturers, you know, anybody on that social media channel, you know, you're seeing good things, you're seeing bad things. And if I think about, you know, our network of members and customers, we're hearing the same thing too. There's some really good crops. Like you said, there's been timely rainfalls in some areas. You know, I live in one of the driest counties in the state of Illinois, and we've been dry. You know, one of the things right now is we think about, you know, what's out there. You know, I'm trying to scout the family farm, kind of see what's going on. It looks pretty good. I would tell you, it seems like there's some tip back in a lot of that corn. That thought looks good at 60 mile an hour when you drive by it. But as you kind of go out there and kind of dig into it, you're seeing some pollination issues. I'm not seeing a lot of depth in the kernel, especially on the corn side. But again, I think we'll see a lot of things. It's all based on, you know, you think about June was fairly dry for a lot of us. Then we got into some wet parts of July. You know, other areas, you know, still stayed wet into August. But right now, if you think about the soybean side, you know, we need a rainfall. I mean, you know, that's when grain and yield is made in soybeans, is right now. And we've got kind of a dry forecast in a good part of these high soybean producing states across the U.S. So we'll see a lot of different things. And we'll know a lot more as we get into the latter part of August and into September.
Well, Jeff, what about disease pressures and pest pressures, et cetera, with the crop? Is there anything you've heard this growing season that's been particularly tough, or is there anything still going on right now that we're watching out for closely?
Yeah, I would say, and again, if I think about the overall sales of crop protection, we've had some really strong fungicide sales once again in 2022, probably higher than we saw in 2021. So diseases out there. I would say it looked fairly clean getting into the middle of July, but we're seeing some pockets now of some gray leaf spots showing up. We're seeing some tar spots showing up in certain areas. I do think as we get into kind of this late August, we'll see some late disease coming into the corn crop. On the insect side, it's kind of across the board. We're still selling some insecticides to control some of those spider mites and some of the bugs that we have out there. But it all depends on kind of where you're at and what you're seeing in terms of the threshold that justifies that treatment.
Well, Jeff, let's shift gears. Let's move to 2023. As you guys start to kind of put that into focus, I know a lot of growers, they've been watching, they've been wondering, what am I going to see for the cost of inputs? What am I going to see for availability across the countryside? We've heard a lot about, telling growers, work with your retailer to make sure you have a plan for 23 ahead of time. We've heard that throughout this year. So from your perspective, when you look at everything, looking into 2023, how does availability look? What are some things that you are maybe wanting to remind growers of as we start to think about next year?
Yeah, great, great question. And again, last week we had kind of a system-wide summit here with all of our members and board directors. And again, same question as you just posed to me. So let me go ahead and start with probably a lot of the same that we experienced in 2022. But I do see some improvement in regards to a couple of those things there that you made a comment to. First off, it's going to start again with good communication, good planning, and working with your retailers in regards to what you're going to need and what you want to do in 2023. From there, we can kind of back up in regards to, okay, so what do we need to kind of procure and position for in terms of those products? Being the herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, the plant growth, the biologicals, all that's a part of it. And one of the things that we see right now, I think a lot of the things that cause some challenges, you think about the things that we experienced in 22 with some shipping issues, port issues, labor challenges. I think we'll see some improvement there, but we'll still have some issues in terms of maybe active ingredient availability, maybe timeliness in terms of getting things produced, manufactured, packaged, and then delivered. I think those will still continue into it, but I really do feel like we've got a good idea in regards to how to operate. But it's going to start more importantly with the forecasting and planning. Within GrowMark, we really started thinking about 2023 back in March. And so even for our first kernel of corn was planted, we saw about 2023 in regards to, okay, let's be thinking about how this is going to all kind of fall together. And so we've been doing on 2023 for about 3 to 4 months now in regards to what that looks like.
Well, Jeff, I know looking through the GrowMark website, you guys have a pretty hefty lineup of crop protection products, of course. And I'm sure if producers want to learn more, contacting their local retailers, stopping by one of your many locations across the country would all probably be good ways to figure out some products for their operation heading into 23.
Yeah, we got a great portfolio, and again, our main resource is that local crop specialist. They're the ones that are attuned to what's going on. They know the portfolios. If plan A doesn't work, we've got a plan B. If plan B is not there, then we got a plan C. They really are our main resource for a lot of the producers and growers that we come in contact with.
Well, I know folks can learn more at growmark.com as well as by contacting their local retailers. With that, Jeff Bunting, VP of Crop Protection with GrowMark, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have for Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a fantastic rest of your day.